Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we are in the midst of a review of The Secret Talks, Volume 5 by E.J. Gold, entitled Work of Groups. We're in our 20th week, and it's been a wonderful voyage. Part of the reason is that, boy, do we have great people on board. And we just have people on board that are allowing it to go in a wonderful way. The individuals here on camera, you see the celebrities that are with me, and we've been able to coax out of wherever they were, and here they are.
The other hot spots.
The other hot spots.
Yeah.
And the people that are here that are supportive every day, every week, in so many ways and so many efforts, we appreciate the effort as well. And then the ongoing individuals who come. Dan, do we have anybody online yet? Two people?
Five.
Pardon? Okay. So, and it's in the effort of cataloging what are the elements of a group. And what we usually do is we start the class by reflecting on those elements as indicated in the previous week, and Pat is usually the one that will read that for us. And would you like to get us started?
That would be great. This is from Wednesday, July 26th, Work of Groups, number 19. 1. Elements of a group. 1. Referring to the quote about no organization means less is possible or small personal efforts, and large organization means more is possible, this group has a scribe who highlights in the moment elements of the group that we may not have captured. Plus, we have someone ask the chat, which allows us to interact in a certain way. And we have the physical phone set up for people to call in. And we have guests who are witness to it all. 2, we have a shared text that we've agreed to read and work with. Part 2, operations of a group. 1, we can see that there's been an increase in our collective understanding that it's at a higher level when we can use humor, a higher scale of analysis, and make a joke based on a higher idea, and it still makes a lot of sense. Notate, the profit of profit of having a unified center instead of a negative center, the machine of many eyes running our center of gravity. I've got to give it to you, Jen.
That's a tongue twister.
Notate, the profit of profit of having a unified center instead of a negative center, the machine of many eyes running our center of gravity. 2, actions spoke louder than words. The group sharing triggered a doorway to open a space for being the surface and to be together in a safe space. Specific trigger, Pat reading the lyrics of the women's song.
There's nothing unique about this particular class than other classes and other gatherings that occur during the week, during the weekends, and so on and so forth. There are several of them. I think the only point is the difference in focus. We're focusing on a particular element. Other groups focus on other elements.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just garnering a particular, we're harvesting in a certain way a particular crop for the use of everybody whenever they would like to use it.
I'd like to add to that, well, we are also furrowing the field.
That's right.
Fertilizing the field, weeding the crop, and harvesting the crop as we go, because it takes all of those actions in order for something to come that is of use for the group.
And when we left off last week, there were still a number of the paragraphs that we had not covered, and a few of those were covered. I got a couple of emails during the week, and I will be posting those in the next couple of days on the homework page.
Mm-hmm.
So then if you avail yourself of the time, you go look at the homework page. It'll take you 15 minutes max. 15 minutes. And then you'll see how other people think about those same paragraphs that you read on catalysts and various other topics that were very important. You'll just see how other people. But I thought that rather than covering that in this class, we would just move straight into chapter 39. And so I'd like to do that because it is chock full. All right? Chock full, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
And this chapter 39 is called The Shifting Self, and it's on page 94 of this particular volume. And you know, when I was preparing the email, I had a realization that there are a lot of people, and some people don't have the book at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know Bernie does and a few others do, but some people don't have it. So I actually put part of the chapter in the email for people to be able to work with some of the exercises, because part of our job is to get this data out there. We want to get the data out there, get it utilized, and we want people to work in that manner. It is important to financially help the Institute from time to time. If you can, do so. It keeps the electricity on and the live stream paid for. Those are the hard costs of performing in this manner. So
mm-hmm.
when you get a chance, do that. But so we're going to go ahead and just, let's just go into 39, and maybe you and Ivan can read
mm-hmm.
a few of the first paragraphs. And then I'm just going to pause you at a certain point and make launch points, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead. Either one of you can start.
The shifting self. When we take back attention, collect it from the procession of associating thoughts, sensations, and emotions, which form the sequence of dissolving views in which one state fades only to be replaced by another. Equally mechanical manifestation, we discover no permanent and sovereign I, just a series of fleeting identities which arise and just as quickly disappear. This can show that we are not one big I, as we first thought, but many little me's.
It is useless to search in ourselves for anything which exists independently and is self-arising, unconnected with anything else, until we have formed in ourselves real I and being. Is necessary to know when to be serious and when to laugh. Sleeping man is without any proper standard. He is solemn when it is wise to be loose, and frivolous when he ought to be serious. He has no idea of the true significance and value of things he encounters in life.
So I just wanted to put a couple of things on the table at this point. One is this, we've heard this idea of many eyes many times, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our job, part of our job, we're journeymen, like in the craft.
Mm-hmm.
We're not master craftsmen. We're qualified journeymen. We've done enough work to get into the business. We're in the business. That doesn't mean that we are complete. So part of our job is self-observation and to notice when a mechanicality comes up. And we basically, mechanical man, of course, thinks we're unified whole. We are not. But we have to say that's okay. We have to start, but we notice it. But then you have to ask yourself, how is the noticing even taking place? Why would it even matter that you're noticing? It matters because you stand in a different world. From that world, you note over there, and you say, oh, look, there I am, being desperate and frightened again. Oh, look, there I am being hungry for this again. Or look how I'm retreating away into myself. Those are all just simple mechanicalities that the machine carries. They're nothing real. How did we learn them? As George has told us in the past, this is where our historical personality. We learn it from our brothers, our sisters, our mothers, our aunts, our cousins, because that's the source that we have to learn from. We don't think it out that we should be doing it in a certain way. We just attempt to survive. That's an okay thing. But then when you get older internally, you must want to move on from that. And so we develop a base of observation, and that base comes because we know there's more. And it's in that essential self that we can stand right now just for a few moments. And if we look at that, the end of that second paragraph, let's take a look at that, Pat. It says, it is useless to search in ourselves for anything which exists independently and is self-arising, unconnected with anything else, until we have formed ourselves real I. Well, there's an implication there, and I think it's throughout literature, a lot of this literature, you see, you can't do anything until this happens. And I'm just saying that we're also in the mode of gradualism. It's a gradualism, and because we're in it for the long play. We're in it for the long play. Nothing has kept my attention in my life more than this. Pat. I've been doing this. I remember when the sparks became evident when I was 19 years old. It became evident that this is what was important to me. Almost 40 years later, I persist in this a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It catches my attention all day long.
Well, you formed the habit of it being where you place your attention, and that habit reflects back at you where you place your attention.
So I've been doing a couple of things recently, and I think I've mentioned both of them. One is I'm taking Spanish lessons, and the other one is I'm actually physically working out quite a bit now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm walking, I'm doing this, I go to the gym, and I'll tell you, I am encouraged. Like I was at the gym today, I do this thing called it's kind of like a stair stepper, but it's a... I don't know what it's called, but it's not, I don't run on a, I don't like that thing, but it's a, and I do it for about 30 minutes, And you know, I guess, what is it?
Treadmill?
Like, it's not a treadmill, it's
an elliptical, baby.
Elliptical. It's like an elliptical. That's exactly what it is. It's an elliptical thing. And it's, so I start about 3 minutes into it, my body starts getting tired, and I go, I should quit. I should quit. And I'm right. That I is correct. Just quit. Be good to yourself. After a while, I fall into this place of realizing that I'm doing something on the for the benefit of my people. And I fall into this space, and the mechanical difficulty of it for the body is immaterial. It's immaterial to the effort at hand. And I, when you fall into that, it's not the, you know, like the runners say, you get the...
It's not the second wind.
The dopamines and
no.
the this and that.
No.
It's not that at all. It's a sense of presence that I'm doing this effort for the benefit of the machine, physical machine part that is working for the work.
Mm-hmm. That precisely explains the next paragraph, shall I just...
Not yet,
okay.
Because I. Why would I persist at something? Why do I have enthusiasm for following this effort, having hours and hours of conversation with individuals on the phone, or coming to this bloody class? It's hot outside.
Mm-hmm.
I could be home watching a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it interests me. And here's the other thing: I get payback.
Mm.
I notice the change in being over time, as small as it is, very gradual, but I notice it. Like, okay, good. Okay? The Spanish lessons I'm more conflicted about.
Well, let us know.
I will. I'm about
Keep
to be
updated.
Thrown into a class with 3 Spanish speakers, and I'm going to be in big trouble.
How many minutes into the Spanish class before you resist?
I start resisting as soon as I connect. But I continue, because, you know, like, and even in a case like that, I had sent an email back, a response, in Spanish, and about an hour later I realized I had said it wrong. So it was in the middle of the night for the people in the Canary Islands, so I sent back, and I felt good that I remembered that it was right.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to reflect on the efforts, the fruits of our effort. Maybe that's a way to say it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a two-prong approach, and I guess that's all I'm trying to say, Pat. You have to have the courage to face the actual mechanicality of who you are, and it can be dismal, and so what? It's this idea of not running from it for a change. But at the same time, maybe there's something happening too. Okay? Go ahead.
On top of page 95. What psychology can there be in relation to such machines? We begin with mechanics, more suitable to machines. Machine does not and cannot know itself. When a machine begins to know itself impartially, it begins to be not a machine, at least not in exactly the same way.
Go ahead. I just wanted to just underline that middle sentence.
Mm-hmm.
A machine does not and cannot know itself. Fascinating. Go ahead, Ben.
Psychology? We will see about that. When chickens have feet and mermaids have legs, ask yourself, have you ever known a man who is the author of his manifestations? who can rely on himself, keep to his aim, not just today or this year, who has rules for himself that does not depend on them and can submit to necessity, yet remain free.
Very unusual sentence.
It's so coincidental with one of the interviews I heard on the radio today.
Yeah.
The concept of having a goal, an aim, that you maintain through the years, and you do it not to an external standard, but to your own rules. That's really that's quite a statement. Yeah.
It's just so this whole idea of as you begin, how is it possible to have rules and be free? Aren't those two opposing ideas? But read the sentence again. Read that same sentence again.
Who has rules for himself but does not depend on them and can submit to necessity yet remain free?
It was that one, submit to necessity.
Mm-hmm.
That we're willing to face the reality of whatever that law of necessity might be at the time, but within that, there's so many other things that we can do that are freeing for us. The mechanical man is not free and is burdened by automatic reactions. Burdened by that. And just before we go on, I just wanted to make one more note. At the very first paragraph, the idea of permanent I or sovereign.
Mm-hmm.
And the term sovereign is the king or the queen,
mm-hmm.
right? The master is starting to return. Maybe the master hasn't returned yet, but maybe we can see them on the horizon a little bit. Okay. Go ahead, please.
He is able to observe himself impartially, free of considering egoistically. He can regard everything, including his own manifestations and views, from the distance of voluntary identification.
Just before you go, I wanted to say in that particular one, Ivan, you know, I've spoken a lot about meetings that I've had in the community about my manifestations over the years, you know, things that have happened. Pat's helped me out many, many, many times. And there's a certain bravery when someone comes to such a meeting because what they're saying is exactly that.
Yeah.
They're saying exactly that. They're putting themselves in saying, I am not that. And they're making a stand. They're taking a stand in the, you know, saying, no.
Yeah. In the light of the community, it's a cleansing, but it's also an incredible aid.
It's like incredible
support. An enormous support.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
To imagination and fear, he is not a slave. He wastes no energy on idle speculation and gossip. His words never betray his inner state. He is authentic and feels the importance of being alive.
I didn't want to have to read the sentence that says, to imagination and fear, he is not a slave, because I cannot compute that. So my mic gets pulled down. There it is. Down.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm grateful that I didn't have to read that sentence. Yeah.
Interesting, Pat. I just noticed, I want to make a comment on that, that there's, I believe it was in the previous chapter by one, mm-hmm. or either two, where I was startled to find EJ talking about, I believe, and he said two things together, that your faculty of judgment, like judging good and bad or right and wrong or good and evil or something like that, can be chained to the mechanical realm, or they can be put to the use of essence, of your essence life. And he said, and like imagination can be used by chief feature, or it can be used in evolutionary way. And that's what, it's interesting to me that he's saying this again here, to imagination and fear, he is not a slave. It means that I can indenture, I can make my imagination the slave to what I want it to do. I can be the master.
That's right. Go ahead.
There exists.
Wait, she's going to.
Oh, yes.
Paula.
Yes.
Again.
Yes, I. Actually, during our show on Tuesdays, we have talked a lot about imagination and fear. And the idea that we use is the adventurer versus being a victim. So to me, all this description in a way is like what I consider a true individual, who is a person that has like built an ethic by himself and experience, and is not against anything anymore, or is not trying to overcome anything, but is actually engaging with all creation and all existence, because he's recognizing like that kind of voyager nature in him. So then from there, he's willing and accepting and allowing everything that is about the experience, which is imagination, for example, to be used for the benefit of that process of waking up and start to use it, rather than something that takes and keeps him limit in the machine and thinking that his sensations and feelings are so real, and kind of victimizing himself over and over and over with his imagination and fear to use them actually to force himself up of all those things and start living a life that is much more satisfactory for himself, rather than this tragedy, drama thing that many are used to live.
Thank you. We're moving to the first paragraph on the top of the next page, page 96. Where is the fixed center of gravity of self? It can never be found in shifting selves. They can all be blown away in one moment. Yes, we may wish to change, but who exactly wishes change? We believe when we study ourselves, we study man, but really, we study a shattered machine calling itself man. It is machine man's tragedy. His little me's are empowered to make agreements which must be paid for later by the whole machine. Think of sex life, then consider if true. Whole life can be wasted pain, unnecessary mechanical depths.
I wanted to underline this whole idea of psychology and this idea of where does it come from that we want to change the psychology. The intent is everything. Intent is, if all you want to do is have a better psychology for life, all you're doing is what Gurdjieff or somebody said, just rearranging the furniture. You're just rearranging, you're not changing anything. And you're using elements within the sleeping machine to dictate what's better for the machine. You want a better machine life.
Yeah, let's have a designer machine, please.
It's a designer machine, very well put. It's like these workshops says, you deserve a better you.
Oh, yeah.
Your pig needs some earrings on it.
Yes. Thank you. I'll take note.
And lipstick, too. Yeah.
Pig, yeah, lipstick, and that'll fix us.
So we're talking, in a sense, and actually 300 years ago, or 350 years ago, this was also reflected by Spinoza, who says, I don't really care about the infirmities. I care about, he says, seeing through the eyes of God, you know, in this essential way. He didn't have this technology, but that's what he spoke of. When it takes care of itself. If you're coming from the right intention of why to change, it just cleanses the rest of it. And things start to drop away that were so bloody important.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Apparently so.
Yeah.
Launch in there, I think.
Ordinary.
Ordinary psychology is study of imaginary man, not taking into account consciousness. Psychology should be study of transition from sleep to self-consciousness to objective consciousness.
Do you have any idea how revolutionary that is? That is thoroughly... I haven't really studied William James. I mean, he came out with a number of issues. His first, you know, the... what was his first book? Major book, Harry, do you remember? His second one, Varieties of Religious
Experience.
One I know is Varieties of Religious Experience.
He wrote one of the primary...
I thought the first basic one.
What
I
is it?
The Varieties of Religious Experience is what I think you're referring to.
That was, well, there was that one, but before it, he wrote one of the basic textbooks on psychology at the end of the 19th century. But it wasn't enough for him. He kept going. And he was implying this sentence here, a psychology of transition. Think of that. I mean, that's a book to write. Go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, it just says here, he wrote... The Principles of Psychology,
what I was thinking of,
totaling 1,200 pages in two volumes, which took 12 years to complete.
Critical, important. Psychology was emerging at that time, you know, all the great, you know, psychologists were about, you know, standing on the shoulders of Freud, I guess. You know more than that than me, Harry.
Oh, we did get some good things from those guys, even though they were more those days.
So then EJ goes in and he starts talking about developing a bit of an exercise. Let's go into that a little bit, okay?
Yes, you
should I go ahead?
Yes.
So he says, hold the thought, I am here. Now, while also holding the idea of self, try to think only of the machine, its name, your right to be present with authority over the machine. Just try that for a second, okay? So we're going to hold the thought, I am here. Get into that space just for a moment. I am here. Now, with your focus on that space, reach out into your mind and say, what is the name of your machine? You have a right to be present with authority over the machine. When you're standing in, here I am, the idea of David this is so foreign.
Well, remote.
It's remote, but it nevertheless is there.
Yes, and it's important.
It's important.
Since you acknowledge the relationship and, you know, bring them both.
And what we're doing over the years here is studying this material is we're considering changing the relationship and this idea of the psychology of transition. Then he goes on in the book and he says, try this exercise. Be aware of one specific body part at exactly the same hour every evening for several weeks. Despite personal pleasures and troubles, it is in this way that this exercise has power. You must not stop what you're doing. Don't deny the outer world. And yet, at the same time, be free from it. So let's just see what he means here. Let's see if we can practice it. So right now, just sit for a second, and we're going to get a commentary.
No,
yes.
I'd like to make a question.
You have a question.
My question is, well, the exercise talked about having the awareness the same time every evening, and that's really where the power lies in the exercise. Why would that be?
Okay, that's a good question, and it's worth focusing on. For some reason, Harry or George, do you want to take a shot at the answer to that?
Well, it's very easy to forget to do something from one day to the next, much less doing it next week.
Okay.
And I was thinking of the chapter in Human Biological Machine, Beachhead at Dawn or something, where EJ is making the point, listen, for 23 hours and 55 minutes every day, you can do whatever you want. But if you make that 5 minutes of being present, the most important thing, then, of course, you spend 23 hours and 55 minutes hungering for that 5 minutes. And so it's I think in answer to Marvette's observation, it's just causing things to revolve around that particular moment where you're doing that particular exercise in pursuit of that particular result to be present.
And I want to say, I want to go back to the previous paragraph where he says, start here with, here I am. He's saying, stand in that particular place, and from that place, notice something, a physical place on your body. What he's saying is that every single day you're taking the position of two different things. I am not that, because it's the observer that you're calling forth as, just as we said at the end of
Invocation
of Presence, thank you, Pat, where we said, you know, I wish this to be used.
The aspect of the exercise that struck me when Marvette asked the question was, even though I know that the cycle of my little eyes have a pattern, I don't believe that they are dependent on time of day. And therefore, each time that you do this exercise, at the same time, there is the opportunity for it to occur with a different eye. So that's one of the things, is that you have this opportunity to not be in a certain state, but any state, and do the exercise because it's time for it. So it cancels out any other pattern or cycle that might be occurring in your machine, in its normal mechanical life, and you're superimposing this on top. And then you have a little bit of authority, and it is the place where you collect a little bit more, what is that thing when you put the fulcrum in, and you, attraction.
Now,
I have a question, Dave.
Go ahead, please.
I've tried to do things like this, in fact, this particular exercise, a variation of it. And it was easy once I figured out to get a watch alarm that would go off at the same time every day. Until, of course, one day I forgot to put on the watch. After about 4 days, I forgot to put the watch on. So I just leave the watch on. But then I'm not really doing the exercise because I didn't remember to do it.
Maybe or maybe not. Maybe or maybe not, Harry. I don't know.
I cheated.
No. Pat's point is very important. She says that if you're going to do this, this is a particular type of invocation of presence.
Yeah.
And she's saying, I don't care what self you're in at that point. I don't care if you're forgetting self or remembering self.
Yes.
It's not the matter of, can I remember? It's if you get yourself into that space for 1 second, for 1 minute, you've conquered the mechanicality of the machine for that moment.
Yeah, it's different than the other exercises,
that's
which
right.
are remember and
there
then.
You go, Pat. Thank
but
you.
This one doesn't say that. It says be aware of one specific body part at exactly the same hour every evening. So,
seriously, a watch that reminded you would be okay?
Sure.
Of course.
Because
Once I've done that part, that's the hard part for me.
Nah.
Remember to do that.
Maybe it is the hard part, but the benefit is what he's saying. This is like a pure way of adding pennies into the essence bank.
See, it's interesting that we have some ways of approaching these exercises depending on like who's up at the moment, you know, like what eye is looking at, okay, here's time for the exercise,
right,
or whatever it is. But the exercise is not the one that says, you know, remember every day. The exercise is be aware of one specific body part.
Right.
It's not at the same time every day, be aware. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
The wording
is
very specific. It says, try this exercise. Be aware of one specific body part at exactly the same hour every evening. And that was the other thing I was going to get to. It says, at exactly the same hour.
That's about 60 minutes.
It doesn't say time. It doesn't say at the same minute. It says at exactly the same hour every evening. So for me, that's a whole different thing than the other kind of exercises where you want to be sure that you're actually on the minute for the thing. It doesn't say that here.
Right.
And
Let's
try it and see what happens.
Now, Dan, how many people are online? Five? Nine people. And then there are...
I can't count. You count.
Several people here.
Yeah.
More than three. And the point is that, and you know, I would say 50% of the people won't be able to won't do the exercise for whatever reason. It doesn't matter. But let's, a few of us, attempt to do this exercise. Do the exercise.
Yeah.
Do the exercise and see and bring the fruits of your labor back to the group next week. It'd be very interesting. This doesn't take, this takes moments. You're invading the principle of the machine and its mechanicality because at that moment, and you'll be start to be drawn to it. You'll be drawn to it at 8:30 in the evening. You'll be drawn to that particular element. So right now, let's just take 1 minute, okay, and think of a body part that you're going to consider.
Yes, Marvette needs the microphone.
Oh, I thought she was volunteering.
No, she's not. Okay. She wants to ask a question or comment. Yes.
And in the exercise, it didn't say that you had to choose the same body part.
Be aware of one specific body part at exactly the same hour every.
Does that mean the same body part?
I cannot answer that.
So I guess you could have that wiggle room, Marvette, if you wanted it. But for sake of this particular class, we're going to say a particular, the same one. So.
Yeah, it might help to read the at the bottom of the page, sacrifice desire to identify in favor of the selected body part and make of it an instrument for self-consciousness. Everything we do in life can in this way become an instrument for self-consciousness. So this is the stand-in, you know, it's like this is the experiment or the emblem of having this awareness of every moment, every body part and every action and everything the machine does.
Overthink this. Let's attempt to just simply do it, and if it's, and do the same bloody body parts, you don't have to think about it every time. And like, is this in harmony with the exercise? Just do the bloody thing, whether it's your knee or your elbow or your thumb. Collect it. So right now, kind of vision that. Right now, vision that you're going to be doing that. And maybe you might even want to place in there what that body part might be. And just approximately, I like the idea for some reason of the evening.
Yeah.
He says evening.
Same hour every evening in several weeks.
And there's in the evening, there's just a little less psychic noise, too, you know, depending on where you live and all that sort of thing. But there generally is a little less psychic noise. So find a time that works for you. I already have a time in my mind. I have a body part. I already know when I can see myself doing it. I can see myself doing it. Okay? So let's see what happens over the week. It might be very interesting to report back. Keep a little journal if you'd like to, or just bring it if it's something that works for you.
Yeah, the second paragraph is, we skipped over.
Yeah.
It says we must not stop what we are doing, not deny outer world while at the same time remain free in it. This is not a stop exercise. This is not a stop, change, start exercise. This is not a change exercise. This is while you are already with whatever it is, put the awareness on a body part. That's you know, nothing else. Don't. If you're ironing, you know, whatever. So make it a body part you can put your awareness on, basically under any condition. Don't make it something that you can't pay attention to unless you're in a certain position.
So sometimes I have meetings in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say I selected 8:30 in the evening, and I selected my right thumb. Okay.
Yeah.
Actually, the back of my right thumb. And then, so let's say I'm in an event, and 8:30 comes around. I could stop in the middle of the party or the dinner or whatever it is and stare at my thumb, right? Or I could excuse myself for a moment and just walk out and just do the exercise. Listen to this question.
Well, I was going to respond to that. I don't know that visual observation is part of the, I mean, it's certainly part of the awareness, but it might not be required.
Correct.
For awareness.
That's correct. You might be correct in that, but until it becomes like a well-furrowed ground, I think I might excuse myself until it's so odd. so clear and distinct that I would do that. But you're right. Technically, you're right. Could.
Because the idea is, I mean, like part of what in this chapter I am understanding is also that it's not about like separating life and then I'm doing this stuff, but it's actually getting into while you are immersed in life doing these exercises in a way kind of like as a to yourself. And you don't need to, it's not about moving the finger, it doesn't say anything, just like become aware. So no one really needs to know.
Let's put it this way. However you do it, fine.
Yeah, right.
Fine. Mm-hmm. Here's the hard part. Doing it. Okay? We've thought, I mean, that we've taken the paragraph. It could be just your attention. It could be you leave the room. It could be da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It could be a different body part. All of those mentations about this are not in harmony with the exercise. Just find your way to it. Trust in your essential self that you'll find the proper way yourself. You will. I know you will. It's in the doing. And so just leave it. Let's just leave that for the moment. And I'm going to read on, okay?
You are.
Yeah.
Good.
So just leave that. By this exercise, new functions can appear of which false man is by nature deprived. This takes many years, maybe even die before the attainment of complete authority over the machine. Yet this is the only beginning of work on self. Man who is swallowed up by the flow of thoughts, engulfed by desires, swept away by moods, if by these little things he is blown away, then what will he do when death takes him? Death is the biggest identification he will ever know. What difference is there between fear of death and acceptance? We believe we will wake tomorrow from sleep, so we do not struggle against falling into sleep. But from death, we do not believe we will wake. We are too important to not continue. So against dying, we struggle. Man who is asleep cannot wake from death. His struggle is short and comes too late. We struggle now. We have strength and means. Then, when death comes, we will not feel his sting. And at him, we can inwardly laugh, but not to his face. Death has no face, and to him, we must never show disrespect. To this king, everyone must bow. Sometime, sooner or later. But a few may be able, while deeply bowing, to also quietly laugh. Thank you for coming. We look forward to seeing you next week at 7 o'clock.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.